What a fang banger.
Hello and welcome to Fang Bangers Podcast, where chaotic horny friends be watching the chaotic horny HBO series True Blood. I'm Elise.
I'm Tessa.
I'm Melissa.
And I'm Tasia.
This week, we're discussing Season 2, Episode 3, Scratches. This episode originally aired on June 29th, 2009. It was written by Rael Tucker and directed by Scott Winant. The summary for this on Wiki was so long that I just summarized the summary.
Okay, great.
Bill is extremely pissed at Sookie, so she decides to walk home and gets attacked by a half-bull, half-man, something or other. Sookie has a huge gash on her back. Bill can't heal her, so he takes her to Eric for help. Sookie makes a deal for Lafayette to be let go. Marianne has a wild party. Jessica and Hoyt meet. And Sam and a new waitress, Daphne, go swimming.
Perfect.
What an episode.
So much happens in this episode.
Yeah, we're back in the groove of it, and I love it.
So much is happening. We're back in the groove, and this is all happening within the same night that we started the season.
Yeah, I was about to say, like, this is a very busy night. But yes. I kind of love that about this show is, like, how fast-paced it is sometimes. Mm-hmm. Because I feel like there's a lot of shows now where I'm just like, oh, like, this is a filler episode. Or this is just, like, it's so slow moving. But the show is just like, no, let's bring it fast. Let's go. Like,
I'm like, are you watching 24, maybe? Mm-hmm. Not True Blood.
It's like you're able to, like, so many things, you're able to, like, you know, pick up your phone and start scrolling or whatever because, it, like, yeah, like you said, a lot of it is filler. But with this show, it's like you don't, if you put down your phone for two seconds, you're going to miss stuff. So, and you can't because it's too wild. Whatever is happening on the screen is too wild to, like, be distracted by anything else.
It's much more interesting than whatever's on your phone anyway.
Mm-hmm. That is true. I was thinking about how a lot of the things that I remember about season two also happened in this episode. Like, obviously we get various Marianne parties throughout the season, but, like, the gash on Sookie's back, she's finally gonna go, like, find the missing vampire, and then specifically Jane Bodhouse and Mike Spencer. Those are, like, all things that make me think of season two of this show, and they just all happened at once.
I think you're so right. And, like, when I think of season two, a lot of the stuff that, like, pops into my mind immediately is stuff that happens in this episode. So, like, that's such a good observation.
I want to also say that even before Lazzie was putting together the list of, like, guests for episodes for this season, I, like, messaged him and was like, I need to be on, like, episode 3. Like, it is my favorite episode of this show because it's just such a... It's such a classic True Blood episode in that, like you said, there's so much packed into one night. It's just wild and, like, not a lot of explanation is given for, like, why it's so wild. And also, one of my top five favorite meet-cutes of all time, like, in movies, in TV, happens in this episode with Hoyt and Jessica finally meeting, which I'm sure we'll talk extensively about that. We'll just break it down, analyze it. It'll be great. But I just, like, this is one of those episodes where I'm just, like, when I'm feeling nostalgic for True Blood, I think about this episode a lot.
Yeah. I love that. Before we get into the plot points in the episode, does anyone have any extra first impressions of the episode they want to share that we didn't already cover?
Well, I mean, I always end up putting my book stuff in other places, so I guess I'll just continue the trend. Okay. Which is that, like, the happenings in this episode are what open the book, and I just think that is funny because I am trying to sort of read, like, in tandem with the episode. So I watched the pilot and then I started reading the book, and I honest to God checked to make sure I was reading the correct book because I was like, I don't remember this. And then when I finally saw the name of this episode, I was like, oh, okay, I know what we're doing. And when I was reading it, I, like, remembered these scenes, you know.
Yeah, I had a similar experience. I mean, I knew it said Dallas in the name of the book, so I wasn't as concerned about if I was reading the right one, but I was like, yeah, I don't remember that the book literally opens with, like, Sookie getting, like, scratched, basically.
So it's exciting. Yeah. We're in it.
We are in it. I was thinking, because it's not, like, a major plot point of the episode specifically, but it's a major plot point in our hearts and minds that we should start with Jessica and Hoyt, because I feel like we're gonna have a lot to say about that.
My OTP. Okay. They're so great. I mean, I hope all of you are Jessica and Hoyt fans here.
Yes.
And listening, yes. Listeners. Yes. I think that just everything about how they meet at the bar is just so perfect. And because I think both of these actors are doing such a good job of showing like all of these like little emotions that are like micro emotions that are happening, like nervousness and hunger and sexual interest and embarrassment, because, you know, in the words of Olivia Rodrigo, love is fucking embarrassing. And so, like, you know, you get all of this like interplay between the two of them. Sex and Candy by Marcy Playground is playing, you know, as she walks in.
Now one.
And
baby.
Also, yeah, it's just like perfect. And there's also this great pun, and I love puns, but it did take me a couple of times watching this before I realized it was a pun. When she comes out to him as a vampire, she, you know, it basically it's him offering to order her food, and she just says, "I'll just take a bottle of True Blood." And then he like looks up at her, like realizing what she's saying, and she says, "Be positive." And it just makes my day. Like every part of it is just so perfect to me.
I did not catch that as a pun.
No, I didn't either. And I read it in the
That's
notes.
That's adorable.
And I still didn't really get it until Tessa started like saying it out loud, how it happened in the
Yeah,
episode.
It's like it's Deborah Ann Wall's delivery of it, because it's like not like she's not like overemphasizing it as a pun. Because, you know, you're kind of in that headspace of like, oh, like she, because we saw her like trying all the different like kinds of True Blood. Like, I can't remember if that was last episode or like the episode before. And, you know, like Bill is like writing down like, okay, like, you know, that like half of this one and like a third of this one, you know, and all that stuff. So like she finally kind of settles on like maybe it's in the like B range of like True Blood. So like I know that that's probably like what most people are thinking when she says that. But like the fact that she kind of shrugs and does this little smile, like, be positive. Like, it's just, like, this, like, delightful little performance.
I just love how set up this was. Like, the show, for as fast as it moves through plots, it has, like, really been slow playing the two of them meeting. And it's possible that, like, when they started characterizing Hoyt, they didn't even really know about Jessica yet. You know, the writers being they. But, you know, they were just making him a good boy who got to meet a nice girl. And then she gets to meet Jessica. It's just so good.
I love how, like, throughout we've seen him be approached by women or try to approach women. And it's always so awkward. Like, he is so awkward every time a girl tries to talk to him or he tries to talk to a girl. But when he approaches Jessica, he, like, asks to join her. And that's such a ballsy move. And it's so much more confidence with a woman that he has shown so far. Just walks right up to her and is like, "Can I join you?" And then how reassuring he is with the vampire stuff. Like he reacts like in the best possible way to that revelation. And we already know that he's like not a bigot when it comes to the vampires and stuff. But mm-hmm. you know, when she tries to like hide her face and like hide her fangs and stuff, and he says, "Don't be embarrassed about what you are." Like he's so firm in that. And I just, he's such a good boy. The whole thing is so charming. I love it.
And I love that he just wants to, he sees her in like the best possible light, but it doesn't feel unrealistic either. It doesn't feel like he's like putting anything on her. Like the whole, like, you know, talking about how he never meets a good girl in a place like this. And she's like, "Well, how do you know like that I'm a good girl?" And he says, "You just are. Like, it's obvious, you know, like
when he talks just, about her smile, know, it just, it's so sweet."
Yeah.
If anybody
it's like
can
he
tell
brings
a
out
church girl.
Yeah. But like considering how she's been acting and acting out for the last mm-hmm. couple of episodes, it really felt like he was seeing the part of her that she was trying to kind of hide, you know, like, "Oh, I'm like an edgy vampire now and I'm trying to like distance myself from like who I was." But he's just kind of like, "This is who you are and I like who you are."
It's like
and
grounding.
I just love that.
Which is really, really yeah. great for her when she's obviously so all over the place right now with this giant transformation she's been going through.
Mm-hmm.
I also want to say that they both look amazing in this I don't know how, like, I know this is someone else's notes, but she's, like, wearing the same outfit she's been wearing, like, forever.
But she refreshes her hair.
It's so funny.
Her like, makeup poor, look amazing.
Poor Jessica. She's, like, wearing the same dress she went to her parents in and then slept in. Like, I know, like, Bill tried to go shopping for her and then, like, got distracted or whatever. But, like, man, take this girl fucking shopping. Get her some clothes.
Yeah. Just let her buy her own clothes. So I don't understand.
Her a makeover. What the hell?
She's literally sleeping in the dirt in this dress. Like,
It actually kind of reminded me of somebody I went to school with. She was actually my roommate, but she had this saying, and this will tell you everything you need to know about her. She had this saying, if it looked good on me yesterday, it'll look good on me today. And that's like what this reminded me of.
I feel like I've heard someone say that, and I can't remember who it was, like someone I knew. It's funny.
I feel bad about this, but I was like, Jessica, you need to brush those curls out.
Yeah, her hair is giving me like a very specific aughts moment, yes, sure. Yeah, when we had those like tight curls, yeah,
and like schoolgirlish.
I was
like,
gonna say that feels very of the time, like not.
Yes, it does. It does. Yeah. We were all doing it,
and the clips.
We've learned.
Yeah, like the little clips. She looks so cute.
She does look adorable.
And to pull off a yellow dress too, like yellow is sometimes like a hard color to like pull off. I think. But I think you're right, Elise, that the scene is actually also really well lit. Like, it, you can just see everything, and both of them glow a lot in the scene.
She just takes him straight back to Bill's house. I love her.
Yeah, I love that.
girl. I also think that this True Blood in general, as I'm sort of realizing on this rewatch, is really good at misdirection. Like, it's constantly making you think that something is about to happen and then something else happens. Mm-hmm. Like, you realize, oh, this is actually not what's going on. And they definitely kind of seed throughout this whole scene that, like, maybe she's talking to him to, like, get him back to Bill's house so she can drink his blood. Like, you know, like, maybe she's gonna kill him. You don't really know. And you kind of get more of that at the end because they're trying to set up that cliffhanger. But like, it is interesting, kind of like, it is kind of unclear if she went out specifically trying to find someone like that she could drink and then ended up meeting him. And then like, it became like a date or like something else completely. But I do like kind of that ambiguity of like, she's trying to, like, just be, like, a normal girl. And again, love is fucking embarrassing. And she's shy. And, you know, she doesn't have a lot of experience. And so, like, that's why her fangs come out, you know, which is, as we know, is, I guess, I don't know, premature ejaculation. Like, metaphor, which is odd if you think about it in terms of Jessica. But, yeah, I think that it's really interesting the way that they're playing with our perception. Like, is she here for sex? Is she here for blood? You know, is like, are her feelings actually changing her original plan? Like, it's just really kind of interesting the way it plays with that.
For sure.
Hoyt's so sweet about that, too.
Like, oh, yeah.
You know, it's one thing for him to say, like, no, don't be embarrassed that you're a vampire. And another thing to, like, be cool in the face of, like, her fangs popping out. Because even though it is natural and, like, we can see in the moment that, you know, it's not like she's going to eat him now, but like, you never really know. She is a baby vampire and like, you know, but Bill wants to be like possessive dad and I hate that. And I'm like, now you like care? I'm like, you better only be worried about Hoyt in this situation.
Yeah, the paternalistic shit from Bill is so annoying because he doesn't even know this girl. He was forced to turn her. That wasn't really his fault. But the way that he's treating her, like, just infantilizing her and but also, like, leaving her alone constantly. So how is he expecting her to connect with him in any way? How is he expecting her to want to listen to him? How is he expecting, like, what is he expecting her to do? Sit at home by herself constantly? Like, Bill, if you're trying to be a dad, you're
probably
a shit dad. And, like, you need to...
She's not going to learn this from a book or something.
If you're not going to be a dad, then don't fucking be a dad. Don't try to father her. Do not be paternalistic. Like, her life is her business if you're not going to invite her into your life or, like, try to engage with her in any way. Like, fuck off. What are you doing?
And this kind of made me think of... We talked about this a little bit last season. This kind of made me think that, like, he's kind of reverting back to what he thinks like the role of the father is in the house, and it's a very outdated role mm-hmm. because like when he actually had children, like with his wife, like the job of child rearing was his wife's job. Like that wasn't his job. And so like I think he's like reverting to like a really weird, like he wants to play this paternalistic role, but he also doesn't know how to actually do the nurturing side because that's not something that he was like raised to do. Still his fault, still something he should figure out, especially since Sookie keeps calling out him out on like how bad he's being at it. But it is interesting to me that he seems to be like going back to like a more 19th century like and view of like the father.
And it's especially interesting considering how much he has like obviously made an effort to modernize himself and his own beliefs and his own, you know, like he's the one who's listening to like throat singing in the car. He's the one that's talking about like being cultural and being blah, 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 blah. Like he has tried to keep up with the modern times to assimilate and all these other reasons. But like, yeah, he's reverting back to some 19th century, like seeing Jessica specifically as this kind of girl, this kind of woman, but not applying those same like standards to other women in his life and to Sookie in particular. Like it's okay for him and Sookie to have sex in a graveyard, like in the middle of the night, out in the open. But it's not okay for, you know, Jessica to express any kind of budding sexuality of her own.
She's like property. Like, yeah. If he yeah. doesn't defend her honor, then like that's a failing of him as like the patriarch.
I also feel like he doesn't even see that she's a sexual being. I feel like I do think he's more worried about the blood in this instance, but it just like,
I think so too. Yeah,
he's like completely unaware that like she could want to have sex. Like that's like how it seems.
I did like, even though this we still get this as a cliffhanger, I did like that we get to see her basically say like, I wasn't gonna hurt him, like mm-hmm. and she says it so like innocently, like it doesn't seem like it's a put on or a like a, you know, it doesn't seem like sarcastic or coy or anything like that. Like she literally is insisted, like, I wasn't going to hurt him. And yeah. I'm kind of glad we got that.
Yeah, because I think that if he would have actually like startled her in the midst of being about to hurt Hoyt, even accidentally, she would have been, you know, shaken up. She wouldn't have been able to say like, no, you're an idiot. Like, I wasn't going to do that.
Yeah.
She would have been like, oh my God, I didn't mean to do that.
Yeah. I never believed for a second that she was there for anything but, like, you know, maybe some makeouts. But right. I do appreciate that she was so earnest in her delivery of that. Like, I'm not hurting him. Like, I have no intention to hurt him.
Agree.
I feel bad for Hoyt, though. Like, making out with, like, the hottest girl that you've ever seen and she's a vampire and then her dad shows up and, like, throws her across the room. Like, that's very confusing.
Yeah, for sure. Anyone else have Hoyt or Jessica feels that we haven't said?
I'm excited to see how their relationship progresses. I mean, I already know I've seen this show, but,
nothing,
you know,
bad will,
I'm
ever
excited to
happen
see it again.
To them ever.
No, they're perfect little babies.
And they lived happily ever after.
Now that we've gotten that scored away. let's discuss Tara Eggs and Marianne, who are
getting fucked
getting up
to
some interesting things. what does Marianne have Carl making? Like, it looks horrifying.
That is way redder and a specific shade of red that I feel like it shouldn't
yes.
be. I mean, I've had some red stews before, but not red like that.
Yeah, one. That one looked just kind of like, well,
there are definitely some organs in that stew. Like, I'm not
you
saying you're human,
have, yeah,
but
and it's definitely in the notes that this is heart stew. So
yeah,
I think that
I wasn't sure if I should say that part.
You can see some, like, you can definitely see some tubes like happening yeah. in there, which is very horrifying. I mean, I know
and
people
heart-ish.
Eat organs, they do, and that's fine. But like yeah. the way it's presented is very disconcerting.
Yes. Yeah. And yeah. the thing is like, I still really like Marianne.
Oh, me too.
In these scenes, and I,
great.
I love her like innocent act when she's like, Sim hates me.
She is so good.
And she is sitting there rolling this outrageous joint. I'm not even going to make a lot of comments about it other than to say that you're doing this without a grinder even. Like, why?
Yeah, I'm like, how did she get it into, like, such a well-formed, like, even cone?
People are not.
It looked like the kind you get at the dispensary. It looked like a dispensary joint.
Like the ones that you like fill in. I mean, this is already more than I meant to say about it, but I just think it's outrageous and so funny. And then Tara's like, "Oh my gosh, it even has a filter! Like, this is so novel." And I'm like, "Okay."
And like, just a trick I picked up in Ibiza.
I learned it in a cornfield. So.
I once watched a YouTube video while rolling a blunt, and I kept getting really frustrated that the guy was, like, taking too long to give the instructions because he was so stoned. I was like, hurry it up, sir.
You're, like, watching
you
it
have to
1.
Make the video before you get stoned.
Right.
Exactly. I don't think that that person had a before they get stoned, like, existence. So they're prepping for this get-together party that is apparently happening. And the whole time I'm like, doesn't Tara have to go to work? Like, that girl forgot about work the second this party started.
Honestly, when Sam Merlot is your boss, like, what does it even matter? Like,
no one shows up for work at his office anyway.
You know, like,
when a party is this fun, like, you just can't go to work.
Also, like, the way that Sam has been acting, he, like, the last couple episodes, and especially this episode, he's kind of been taking out his bad mood on everyone. So, like, I feel like if I were her, I'd be like, yeah, I could go to work, which is a not fun place to be right now, or I could stay at this party with this guy that I'm really into.
Who,
like,
wants to leave a party, like, at their house, a huge party, to go to work? Like, I don't know about you guys, but I simply do not have that kind of willpower.
Yeah, it couldn't be me.
Yeah, no, I would be like, got mental health thing. Sorry, bye.
I mean, like, I'm a problematic person because I would just be like, Marianne, this job at Merlot's is just not serving me, and I need to just live at your house, like, for free and do nothing for, like, several months until I just get back on my feet.
Same.
Oh, yeah. If I lived at Marianne's, I would totally not work.
Not like, having a job.
I would not. I would not have a job.
Clearly see how toxic Sam is for Tara. She doesn't want her around him.
I would also maybe be asking for an allowance. I want to not work, and I want you to give me money so I can go shopping.
Do you need somebody to, like, vacuum the pool every day? Because I will do it for living wages.
Melissa will also be your pool girl.
Yeah.
I was thinking, like, if I had to, like, have sex with eggs as, like, part of the deal, then I'm also fine with that.
Yeah. Marianne probably would take that as payment. She would.
Whatever you think my standards are, aim lower. Like, I don't
care.
I have to say, I was telling Elise about this, and I'm sure it's already been mentioned before in, like, previous episodes that haven't been released yet. But when I originally watched this, I don't know why I didn't make the connection between the actor who plays Eggs and then later in Supergirl, he plays Jimmy Olsen. I don't know if this has come up yet on the podcast. But watching it now, like, all I can think of is Jimmy Olsen from Supergirl, and, like, that is a really weird, like, combination of characters, like, to have in my head while watching this.
That is really funny. There's something in the next episode that makes that even more amusing. I will leave it there. So this party is getting very crazy. People are getting topless, which is, in my opinion, wonderful. Not into Andy Belfour being like, I'll have one drink, only one drink, I'm on the clock. Don't like that.
Marianne gaslighting gatekeeper girl boss. Gaslighting Andy into being like, what pig?
Oh, yeah, that's so funny. But I do feel very strongly that if you're a police officer and you're holding a gun as part of your job, maybe don't drink on the job.
Bare minimum.
I don't think I had realized that he was supposed to be an alcoholic until now.
This,
like,
just happened.
I don't think that had come up before.
I think he mentioned once in the first season that he doesn't drink. and like he says it pretty firmly. And so to me that stood out, like, usually, you know, if somebody's gonna say like, no, I don't drink kind of thing, like, or yeah. He says that, or he says something like, I haven't had a drink in blah 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 years, and it's kind of just an offhand comment, but it's like said very firmly. So when he starts drinking, that was kind of like an instant, yeah. Like, uh-oh.
Yeah, I'm not always a huge fan of alcoholic storylines because I think that in general they aren't done very well usually, and they're just sort of there to like make a statement about the character more than they are to like actually do anything with them.
Right.
So I am curious. I didn't remember this from watching it before. I am curious to see where it goes, but I'm like also kind of scared because I just like not a huge fan.
I don't really know where it goes. I don't remember where it goes either, but I do agree that like it feels a little bit like they're so far that they're doing this to make it just like indicate that he's falling apart. Rather than like it actually is him dealing with the alcohol.
I don't disagree about Andy. I do think this show is capable of handling alcoholic stories well because I feel like all the Letty Mae stuff is done really well, just in terms of being person that is affected by alcoholism, as in like, you know, Tara. From Tara's point of view, Letty Mae's whole mothering journey with her has been very like her experience as a child of an alcoholic, I feel like, was handled really well, and Letty Mae's like recovery and how she's now using that to, you know, justify being just really judgmental of other people and blah blah blah. Like I think this show has handled that like addiction, alcoholism storylines pretty well, but I don't necessarily think that's what, I don't really remember honestly, but I don't think that that's what's gonna happen with Andy, because I do think this is just like, here, he's drinking to like, this is how we're gonna show you his decline, like the decline in his right. You know,
and they're
his
also
competence.
Making it like they're making it comedic a little too,
which I feel like they never did with Letty Mae. Like it always felt like a very
correct
serious
it was always
illness.
More tragic
and it was very obviously she was sick.
Yeah, that's the thing that sticks out to me, I think, is that for Andy, it's just like, oh, look at this ridiculous person who, like, is too self-important. And, you know, he's a cop, but he's, like,
he's
horrible
been brought
at
down
his
low.
Job.
Yeah.
Yeah, it kind of feels more like that to me than it does, like, actually examining him as a human being who has, like, a legitimate illness.
Yeah, I totally agree.
Yeah.
I do think it's interesting that Tara seems to be the only person who isn't really sucked in by the party. Like, she's enjoying herself. But, like, when she kind of looks around and realizes, like, how wild the party's getting, like, it feels like she's kind of like, yeah, this isn't really my scene. Whereas everybody else doesn't seem to have that kind of control or perception. It's like everybody else is kind of sucked into it.
I wonder
but Tara
if this
seems
is also,
pretty...
Yeah, I wonder if this is also a side effect of Letty Mae. Living under an alcoholic for so long that it's kind of, you know, this has got to be a little bit of a PTSD kind of like this. But this is probably a little bit triggering for her to see all these people completely out of control and acting wild and stuff because she's seen her mother in various states of unruly behavior. So that's probably not very appealing to her.
That's a really good point. I think that might make her I wonder if that makes her particularly resistant to Mary Ann's. Form of beguilement, I guess. I'm not saying she's completely immune from it because we do see her, we do see her later kind of participating in it more, but I wonder if that experience causes her to be able to think more critically about what's happening.
Well, she seems to have like a built-in like guard there.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I also wondered if like Mary Ann kind of eased in on it with her and just like, because I feel like we still don't really know what Mary Ann's whole deal is. So like Tara is like the newest person in her orbit. So I feel like maybe she's like focusing on her. So maybe she's not like, didn't give her as much magic. I don't know. I don't know if that even makes sense.
Or it's like one of those things where like you start dating this new person and they're great at first and they kind of slowly introduce their shittiness.
Yeah.
And that's how it's like, you know, boiling a frog where you just kind slowly increase the heat until they don't notice. And that's how abusive relationships almost always go. So that feels like that could be part of it too, is that she's very intentionally easing Tara into it, especially knowing that Tara has like, you know, all of this trauma from her mother and is probably like very already keyed in to like notice people acting out of sorts and getting fucked up all the time and like not finding that appealing. So yeah, I think it makes sense that she's like very slowly turning up the heat on Tara.
Yeah. My computer had a meltdown, but I'm back.
Yeah, we saw you dropped off for a minute.
Melissa, before we move on, do you have anything else to say about Tara or Eggs or Marianne or that whole crew?
No, and I don't know for sure if you guys already said this, but I just feel like, for me, I just understood that, like, Tara isn't interested in, like, getting fucked up and out of control, and so then, like, Marianne's magic just doesn't work on her because she's just not, like, open to it. Like, she didn't go to a party to, like, have, like, a real party time, or she's just so able to, like, keep herself in control due to her childhood that there was, like, no crack in her armor for any of that, like, magic to, like, sneak in for her. And, like, you know, we'll see what happens when she, like, gets more comfortable with Eggs and more comfortable with Marianne and, like, more comfortable with seeing these parties happening with, like, without any of the bad shit that she saw when her mom was, like, out of control. It's, like, there was obviously, like, an immediate aftermath that was negative for her. But when they all wake up tomorrow and everything's fine, you know, after a while, that's how you end up doing things.
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Just like slowly normalizing and
no,
it.
No one exactly said that.
Okay, great.
So next we have Jason, who's still at the Fellowship of the Sun church camp.
Yeah, he's having
Jason,
like,
what are you doing?
Waking nightmares, which are like terrifying. I would prefer to never be haunted. I'm going to go ahead and...
Although, as far as being haunted goes, Eddie is not the worst person.
He isn't. And it's that's really fair. Just the guilt that's the problem. If you could have just had a normal relationship with Eddie, it all would have been fine.
And that the presence of that guilt is such a good thing. Like, he should feel guilty about it. And the fact that he does is, like, a good sign about Jason's character. And I think, like, Jason in that group therapy session is essentially what it is actually so good. Like, he really needed to say all of that, and to, like, the fact that he's starting to work through it and, like, see, like, they're trying to make him okay with what happened, but he knows it's not okay. He knows it wasn't right. It wasn't a good thing to do. And so he starts, you know, he's starting to back away from the whole church thing. And then it's just so sad that Sarah has to go and fuck that up, like, undo that road. Like, he was on the road, like, he was on such a good track for a second there.
I also feel like the way that churches like this, or really any, like, group like this that is really bigoted and, like, wants their members to, like, direct their hate towards a specific group, they're always going to talk in, like, generalities and, like, you know, vague, like, well, those people, you know, do this, or this is how those people feel. And I feel like having Eddie as, like, such a specific counterpoint, like, he does mention Bill at one point where he's like, I mean, he seems fine or whatever. But I think knowing Eddie, having gotten to know Eddie, knowing that that was wrong, like, what happened, I think that that is ultimately what is going to allow him to, like, maybe work through this, because they don't have any real specific examples. It's always like, well, my sister disappeared. We don't actually know what happened to, like, her sister, or this you know, like, they just want this, or they just want that. But he has a specific, like, experience with, like, a vampire, you know, that he's able to say, like, no, like, this person was a good person, you know. And I think that that's just a really, I mean, of course it's Jason, so, like, it takes him forever to think through things. Does not have, like, two brain cells to rub together. But he,
he has is working so hard.
Yeah, it's working so hard. He's trying really so is. Hard here. But, like, I think that, you know, he is having to, I think the idea of, like, sometimes it's, like, overused, this idea of, like, oh, you should meet someone from that group, and that's going to, like, dispel all the hatred and bigotry. But I think for Jason, it is actually something that's helping him to be like, no, I actually know a vampire, or I knew a vampire, and he, like, was not like this.
And really the only thing Sarah can say to that is by removing the humanity from Eddie. And there's nothing Jason can say to that, because it's like, oh, you know, he wasn't a person. He's a thing. He's a dead thing. And unfortunately, it's an argument that kind of works just because of that the very specific nature of a vampire, which, mm-hmm. you know, they are dead creatures that are essentially reanimated by magic. But, I mean, that's the same rhetoric that any hate group uses, which is removing the humanity from the group they're trying to oppress or the group that they're trying to, like, you know, inspire hate for is by removing their humanity. And Sarah does it very effectively.
Well, Sarah just saying, like, he wasn't a person. Would a person do that? Like, a member of an oppressive church organization saying that, like, really makes my skin crawl and my blood boil. And I'm mm-hmm. like, thank you, True Blood. I definitely needed to confront this today.
Yeah. Just to go on with that, I did like that Jason also said, yes. kind of in response yes, to that, Jason. Where he was like, well, my best friend was a human and, like, he killed my girlfriend and, like, all of these other people. Mm-hmm. Like, so, like, yeah. humans can do evil shit, too. So I did like that he pointed that out, even yeah. if, like, it does kind of seem like a lot of that's undone by the end of the episode. But I think, again, with Jason, it just takes a while. Mm-hmm. Like, I think he just...
The seed is
that's
planted.
That's an idea that needs to, like... Yeah, that's an idea that just needs yeah. to, like, be on the marinate back burner in his head for yeah. a while. But Jason, as we've also seen, he gets caught up in what other people want a lot of times instead of, like, what he wants or what he knows. And I think it's because he does, like, want an identity as part of a group. I think that's why, I can't remember her name, I'm sorry, his girlfriend.
Amy,
thank you. I think that's why he liked Amy so much, is because Amy had such a strong, weird personality that, like, he was able to, like, be like, oh, yeah, like, you know, I'm part of this, too. I can do these things, like, with her. And, like, he wants to be part of this group because he wants to have that sense of belonging. And so that's why he's kind of easily swayed into, like, joining these types of things. But I do think that there is, like, that little empathy part of him that is working in the background. It just takes a while to get going.
Well, that yeah. and, like, that part of Jason that's always, you know, living in the past of his glory days of high school and football and this and that, and he's kind of getting a taste of that again here. That, like, hero worship of Jason Stackhouse and how everybody just, like, instantly falls in love with him at this place. Like, that's got to be so intoxicating for him, for someone who
oh, yeah.
has been, like, grasping for something like that again, just feeling so lost without that identity of being, like, this superstar.
Also, I don't know if we've actually talked about Anna Camp yet, because I haven't heard, like, the episodes this season. But Anna Camp, like, what a great casting choice for this character. Mm-hmm. Like, she's kind of perfect, and I love that she's channeling a church lady here, but I also really love that she clearly, like, is really into Jason, because yes. every single woman who Jason meets is somehow really into Jason, and I get it, like, but, like, it's just very funny.
We all love a hot dummy.
Love a hot dummy!
But no, I think you're totally right. Anna Camp is perfectly walking that line between, like really upstanding, like, uptight kind of church lady and, like, deeply horny. Like, so horny.
Oh, yeah. It's the repression.
Yeah, yeah.
Repression is a real thing.
This is the role she was born to play. Yeah, she knows. She knows exactly what show she's in.
That I do get really sad that, like, I know Tasia said, like, Jason's, like, almost on the cusp of, like, thinking the right thing, but I just these church people are so good at their manipulation. It's like,
they've manipulated much smarter people than Jason Stackhouse.
Yeah.
Not that that's
And, like,
hard.
They do it in, like, a 1-2 punch, because Sarah does it, and then Steve basically has, like, a very similar speech that he gives to them, and they're just...
That, you know, Sarah coached him on.
They're making him feel... Oh, yeah, for sure. They're just making him feel so special. Yeah. And it's just...
She doesn't bring her pudding out for just anyone.
Yeah, I bet she does.
Yep.
I bet.
Okay, Steve Newland, do you bring your shoulder sweater out for everyone or what?
Probably.
I do want to say the reason I haven't had much to say is because this... We recorded out of order, as you all... Well, you who I'm talking to know. So a lot of these things are things that we still talked about in the next episode. So I'm having a hard time differentiating, like, which happened in which episode, unfortunately. Yeah. But, like, I'm doing the best I can.
You're doing great. You're doing amazing.
Yeah, you're doing great. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't envy you watching, like having to watch and take notes and record the episode that comes after this chronologically, because I was like, okay, if we're doing this out of order, I cannot watch the next episode because I will get everything.
I haven't watched
it. Yeah, that's how I feel too.
If I wasn't going to be on both episodes, I would not have watched ahead. But it's just, you'll all listen to it and then it'll be good follow-ups to what we... I'm, like, smiling because we comment on a lot of the things that we are talking about right now.
Hell yeah.
Pulling those themes through.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, I mean, Jason just had no chance in the face of, like, Sarah Anna Camp Newland making, like, a personal... A personal connection with him and then being like, let's touch each other and look into each other's eyes. And take deep breaths. So
really deeply.
It's over for Jason. See you in the next one. Like.
Also, before we move out of this church, I do have to call out the wonderful church girl rock group that performs.
Oh my god!
In this episode with their first single.
I forgot about that.
Their first single that's like Jesus is my lover or something like that.
Today.
Jesus asked me out today.
I'm pretty sure it's fucking absurd.
as someone who grew up in a church like this, I have to say this is satire, but it's actually not that far off. Like, it's really disturbing.
It's like barely an exaggeration.
Yeah, exactly. It does really feel like either Alan Ball or someone who works in his writer's room definitely grew up in a church like this. Uh-huh. Like, it just feels very real to me. Like, this is a place I have been. These are people I have met, and I appreciate that.
Yeah, this is not somebody writing like from their idea of what like religious South kind of environment is like. This is experience talking.
Craziness.
All right, are we ready to move on?
Yes. Lastly, we have Suki and et cetera, et cetera.
I like how that's written in the notes. Suki, et cetera, et cetera.
I mean, there was a couple other people involved in that storyline, so.
Yeah. Bill's still yelling at everybody.
As I said in the opener,
not gonna lie.
Yeah. Bill's mad at her, so she goes running off from him and gets that horrible gash on her back. And Bill tries to heal her, and none of that works. So he's like, I gotta take her to...
While they're
the best doctor ever, I decided.
While they're still fighting in the car, I'm pretty sure Jessica tells him to eat shit. I guess what I should say is I wrote "eat shit" in quotes with a bunch of exclamation points. But we watched this 2 weeks ago, so that's what I think happened, and I think I liked it.
I love that Bill is constantly like, "You can't mess with vampires, Sookie. Like, they're dangerous." But like when Jessica runs into her parents' house in the last episode, and Suki did try to stop her. Like, what was she supposed to do? Like,
he leaves Suki like as a Jessica babysitter. Yes, like, what are you? Expecting I know, and it's to like, able,
what?
Yeah.
How?
Be able to
what
control?
Is she gonna do to stop Jessica from doing whatever the fuck she wants? Like
I think I might have mentioned this in the last episode, but like that entire Jessica situation that he's so mad at Suki for was entirely his fault because he could have prevented that entire disaster by just taking Jessica himself, like letting
just
her look
her
through
shop.
The window for a second, you know, let her look through the window for a second, let her have her like goodbye. He got that fucking goodbye.
Yeah.
Like,
and like
his maker took him to look at his family from a distance so he could,
and
like,
she did it
deal
out of
with
like,
his feelings about
cruelty,
it.
But he did get to deal with his feelings, and like Bill could have learned from that lesson, taken Jessica there, and then had the strength to hold her back from running inside when she got mad and decided to kill her dad. Like, it's just
that entire thing was his fault, like top to bottom.
Bill is just completely the worst. So Suki gets mad at him. She ends up with this horrible wound. And then later in the episode, Bill is like, Suki, you're still mad about our fight? That doesn't matter anymore. And it's like, Suki is the mad one, not you.
Yeah.
You were yelling and being unreasonable and being a dickhead. And just because Suki also almost died doesn't mean she's going to forget about how you yelled at her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, he acted like he was the only one that was mad about that.
I'm going to say that wound is his fault, too.
She left the car to get away from this because she hates you and thinks you're terrible. I mean, she didn't go that far. I went that far. But I'm, you know, we don't actually hear her one... say, like, this scratch was worth running away from you, you big meanie. But
yeah.
Can we talk about how disgusting this gash is, though, also?
Yeah, I mean, it's horrible. And then the doctor sticks her finger in it.
Yeah, it's... So we don't really get to see, like, what gives her the gash. It looks like a minotaur, like, kind of, like, the outline of it. But, like, her, we don't really... It happens really fast. We only kind of see it. But it is, like, a really scary scene. Like, this scene does actually feel a lot more, like, straight-up horror. Like, monster horror. Just the way that the creature kind of moves. It's like that, like, stutter effect as it gets closer to her. And I think that that is, like, pretty scary. It worked. I mean, I thought it was pretty scary anyway.
Yeah, no, I think it is pretty scary. Like, this whole season, I feel like, is, like, genuine horror. Like, all the Marianne stuff is genuine horror.
And then, like, to find out that this injury cannot be healed by vampires, so he's like, I'm fucked. I've been healed by vampires so many times.
And it's not just that it can't be healed by a vampire, but she immediately starts having a seizure. Like, it's like a bad reaction.
Yeah, yeah. Blood.
So that it is really terrifying. Yeah. I will say, just one backing up really quickly, I do love that as she's, like, storming off from the car, and Bill's just like, she'll, like, cool off or whatever, which is such a stupid thing to say. But, like, Jessica's eye roll where she's like, she just wants you to go after her and tell you that you love her. Like, the way she says it is just such a, like, teenager, like being like, oh my God, I have to explain this to my parents. It was very funny to me.
I do think it's interesting that, I mean, Eric is 1,000 years old, and in all those years of life or undeath, he has never heard of whatever this is that injured Sookie, which is wild. Like, it's wild. Like, how it just gives kind of like a little glimpse into how big this world is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That is something that's a little bit different in the book. I was going to say this for later, but they actually know what it is, like, pretty soon. I don't know if they, like, figured out the poison or just knew, but they, like, in the book, they just knew what kind of creature it was, which I thought was an interesting change.
Yeah.
And so it takes the mystery out of it. So much pain. Like, legitimately seems like she's just, like, being tortured. Like,
couldn't they just give her some morphine? Yeah. Like, give a bitch some Vicodin or something. Like, what are they doing? Like, why haven't they just knocked her over the head like a caveman so she doesn't have to be conscious for this? Have
any drugs?
Right.
It actually kind of reminded me of the scene from the plane crash scene from episode from Grey's Anatomy where Meredith is like where they're resetting Derek's hand and Meredith is like, please pass out. Yeah. Like, that's all I can think of, like, in that moment. Or it's like, just make her pass out somehow.
Yeah.
I was so grossed out by Dr. Ludwig, like, sticking her hand in the gash. And that specific scene is what I meant in the beginning of our episode where I was like, Sookie's gash makes me think of, like, it's that scene with the gash, not just her having it, like, Dr. Ludwig's finger, like, all up in it. That's what my brain remembers. So gross.
But give that girl a bonk on the head.
Like, Dr. Ludwig, I want to see a show where she's like, I wanted to follow her out of, like, Fantasia. Like, I want to see what the rest of her night is like. Like, I want to know, like, where she's just treating all sorts of, like, supernatural creatures and, like, being all grumpy at them. Like, I want that.
Again, it's like this glimpse into a broader world, and I'm like, I want, like, all the spin-offs. Like, give me the you know, medical show with Dr. Ludwig or whatever. Like, I want all of these little spin-offs.
I also just want to know, because
when we were watching it,
go ahead
I was just saying, when we were watching it the other night, because Tessa and I watched it together, and she said the thing about the a TV show. It'll be like Royal Pains, which is that like guy is like in a rich like Long Island, the Hamptons or something, and he does like rich people house calls all day. Like, I want this show mixed with that.
Perfect. I'd watch
it. Like, I think it's interesting that she, like, Eric even, like, clearly respects her. Like, they all, like, respect her as a doctor, like, for what she does and what she knows. because, like, I mean, Eric, like you said, Tasia is like over 1,000 years old. And so it seems unlikely that he would be so respectful to a human. Like, we've seen, like, other humans say, like, way less, like, grumpy things to him and him, like, fly off the handle, you know. But she's able to just, like, basically be hangry at him and tell him to, like, mm-hmm. shut up. And, like, he doesn't do anything. He's just, like, that's just who she is, you know. And I think that it would be interesting. I think part of it is respect for, like, what she knows and what she does, because, like, obviously she figures out this toxin, you know, way before he does. But I would be really curious to know, like, what their working relationship is, because it does seem like everybody there knows her and respects her.
Yeah, this is not their first interaction or their first house call.
Yeah, no. It's Fantasia.
I wonder if she saved Eric's life at some point, maybe. Who knows?
Yeah, maybe.
Probably. And I like it that it's right. He's like, you know, she doesn't like vampires, but, you know, she can't tell us to fuck completely off because our blood is obviously very useful for healer.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. They probably have a deal.
Yeah.
Back off, vampire.
I want to know what it is. I want this show.
I can just imagine Tessa, like, downloading, like, on the internet, like, their specific, like, contract that they have.
Yeah.
And, like, just reading it.
Through it. Looking up.
That's a whole other podcast.
Looking up Dr. Ludwig Eric fanfic on AO3.
I'm sure that exists.
Oh, I'm sure.
It has to. I love that because Ginger is Ginger. Sookie finds out that Lafayette is in the basement. Yep. Does anyone have, like, as good of, like, a horror movie scream as Ginger? Like, I'm sure we've talked about this already, but, like,
Ginger's a scream
queen.
That
actress.
Like, in the best amazing. Tradition.
Mm-hmm. Amazing.
They just keep letting her
Ginger
scream.
Also knows what show she's in.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes, I would agree.
Also, I just, like, am kind of in love with Sookie's outfit here. I know it's supposed to be kind of ridiculous that she's wearing, like, this overly large, like, Fantasia shirt, but it actually looks really good on her.
T-shirt,
like, as a dress with the white shoes.
A great,
like,
outfit.
Yeah, she looks great. Especially for someone who was, like, dying,
no,
like,
kidding.
8 hours ago.
This is the second time in 3 episodes that Sookie has been all nice and then immediately turned on a dime to Bill and been like, what the fuck, sir? And I love that that keeps working for her because, you know, when he says the thing about, like, oh, is this still about our fight? She's like, no, it doesn't matter anymore because Lafayette is in the fucking basement. Did you know about this?
Yeah, she's like, I'm over that. Like, this is a bigger problem.
Yes. Which, like, I mean, Bill's lucky he didn't know. Sookie's probably lucky Bill didn't know, because if Bill knew, then, you know, Eric would have had him involved. It's a whole thing.
Yeah, and then, like, Sookie forgiving him for that would have been maybe too far to...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It would have stretched believability, I think.
Yeah. How do we feel about Sookie slapping Eric?
I love it. Their banter is incredible. Maybe I'll
grow on
you.
He deserved it, 1,000%.
Oh, he deserved it. But also, does it turn him on? I think it does.
I think he, like, I think he really likes the fact that, I mean, like, everybody obviously, like, cajoles him. Everybody, like, especially humans, like, nobody is ever, you know, putting a toe out of line around him. Everybody's, like, so, you know, just worships him. And she doesn't. And to somebody with that amount of power, to have somebody, like, stand up to you, even though they have no power in that dynamic, like, that's impressive. That's ballsy. That's something he's probably not used to. And it's almost like a, I think at one point he even says, like, oh, this is kind of like a novelty. Like, but that novelty will get old if you continue to fuck with me like that. But, like, I think he does. He is, like, it makes her interesting. And she's always been like that, too.
Yeah.
Like, even with Bill from the very beginning, like, he would try to use, like, you know, aggressive language or something with her to, like, in, you know, show her what a badass vampire he was, and she's like, no, you will treat me like a lady. Like, she's always, you know, stood on her, you know, she's got her integrity and she doesn't give a shit how much power you have. She will tell you you're being impolite,
and she knows that, like, what happened to Lafayette is wrong. Like, mm-hmm. everyone else there is, like, fine with it because of like what he did or whatever, but mm-hmm. she's just like, no, this is wrong, and it doesn't actually matter if you kill me or tear me apart or whatever, like, it's still wrong, and I'm still going to tell you that it's wrong, which I think says a lot about her as a character as well. Mm-hmm. This also is the beginning of something that we're going to see continued over the next couple of episodes, where Erica starts trying to give Sookie his blood, because we actually see it happen when Dr. Ludwig tells Bill, like, oh, okay, you can give her your blood mm-hmm. now, and he's like, well, I'm older, mine's stronger, maybe we should give her my blood, you know? And, like, knowing the connection that that makes between, like, a vampire and, like, a human, it does seem like he's very interested in obtaining some kind of connection with her at this point. Yeah, and I don't think it's just about, like, what she can do. I think it is about her and, like, how she treats him.
Right, because what she can do, I mean, he can still control those powers based on his amount of control over Bill as Bill's sheriff.
Right.
So he's, right. you know, and he's, you know, he can bargain with her. Like he and that doctor have, you know, they're mutually useful to each other, so they have an agreement. But he's not trying to fuck that doctor. he is making arrangements with her. He could do the same thing to Sookie if he were interested in her otherwise. But he does want that, like, tangible kind of physical something.
What if we had Royal Pains, but, like, the early years, and Eric is in it, and Dr. Ludwig is, like, 30 years old?
I would watch that show,
and
too.
They were trying to fuck.
Maybe that's why she's so grumpy at him all the
time. They have history.
I was going to say, maybe he ghosted her, but nope, I believe that she ghosted him.
Oh, yeah.
And now she's like, oh, totally. She's just like, you keep popping up in my life. I was trying to get rid of you.
I think...
So...
Go ahead, Elise.
Oh, no, I was going to talk about the trade, but if,
oh,
if you're...
Oh, I was
going to
talk about
that,
too. I was going to say, like, I think it's really funny that... Eric is just collecting leverage to use against Bill and Sookie when, like, he was definitely going to do this anyway. And so now Sookie doesn't have to find out that, like, Bill can be number one controlled by Eric.
Yeah.
We're never going to find out, you know, what Eric was planning when he said, like, wrong choice, Bill, when he said no to Dallas, because now they're going and they're getting $10,000.
I loved that. I laughed so much at the little aside where she's like, where she tells Bill, I've been missing a lot of work and I need a driveway.
Yeah.
Like, and she's like, come on, I'm going to get paid for my labor. God. Like,
smart girl.
Yes. Yeah. So Sookie is going to look for the missing vampire in exchange for $10,000, Lafayette's release, and Bill escorting her.
It's a pretty good deal considering she was going to be doing it anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. $10,000 is great.
And I think that also shows, like, we don't really know much about the missing vampire or vampires yet, but I think it does mm-hmm. show how important this is to Eric.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That he's willing to take such a deal that is so obviously, like, not in his favor.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yep, I agree.
Although I don't actually think that $10,000 means anything to Eric. Like,
probably not, but still, it's you know,
we know he cares about
even
his
if it's
money.
$20, he is. Yeah, even if it's $20, yeah. he is still the one backing down from this. He's still giving them
what they want.
I just feel it's really hard to watch Lafayette be so hurt mm-hmm. and so sad.
He's so traumatized.
And, like, the way he like curls up in a ball, like, on his couch. I just want to hug him, but, like, also he probably doesn't want to be touched. Yeah. Like, mm-hmm. I just feel like there's no right thing to do.
Yeah, and I don't even think he really has anyone to talk to about it because he has to, like, lie and say that he basically was, like, on a bender.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he doesn't have any, like, he can't talk to, like, a therapist or a friend or, you know what I mean? Like, there's just, he has to kind of deal with all this trauma on his own.
Yeah.
At least he gets to be back with his own blanket now.
Yeah, that blanket looks really loved. We didn't really talk about Sam and Daphne, but the episode ends with them going for a little swim. and we see that Daphne has the same scratches on her back that Sookie had gotten at the beginning of the episode.
Curiouser and curiouser.
And that is our cliffhanger. Yes, and that is our cliffhanger.
I have a couple notes about Sam before we discuss the cliffhanger at length.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
He's a dick. He's a bad boss. there's that. There's also, if he was honest about his history with Marianne Teterra, she would maybe react differently to him, and we don't know what would have happened, but not what is going to happen, because he couldn't do it.
Like, what is
Age
holding
old
him
TV,
back?
Just say the thing.
Yes.
I feel like he doesn't have to tell her about being a shifter to tell her about his history with Marianne. Like, omit certain things, but like, yeah, just have a conversation.
Or tell her that, too. Her best friend dates vampires. Like, she's an open-minded person. Like, she... Whatever. Terry,
she knows you bark in your sleep.
Yeah, she does.
That's true.
And then Terry Belfour being like, remind me not to get stuck in a foxhole with you, you coward. And I'm like, it's incredible. It is spot on.
I love Terry
on.
So much.
Terry rules. Sam sucks. Okay. That's it.
Well said.
Like, him telling off Daphne was just too much. He's done a lot of things that are too much, but I really didn't like that one.
I felt really bad for Daphne because I like that Tara pointed out, like, she's never going to learn if you keep, like, yelling at her for things. Like, that's just not how people learn. And so, like, I felt really bad for her for most of this episode. This kind of goes back under character intros as well, but I do think that this cliffhanger is supposed to kind of tell us that maybe Daphne isn't all that she seems, not just because of the scratches, but even like the way that she is talking to Sam is very different than what we've seen her. Like, she's always been kind of shy and flustered and like, oh, you know, like, I'm just like a bumbling waitress. But the way she talks to Sam when he's swimming is very, it's much more composed. It's much more put together. It's a lot more flirtatious.
Confidence levels have shot up.
Yeah, it kind of seems like maybe a character reintroduction in some ways. Like, oh, this character might not be who we thought she was.
Yeah, I agree with that. Because, you know, it's hard to say, but Sookie got completely healed, so she doesn't have scars. So it's hard to say, like, you know, we just have no idea what happened to Daphne to have her get the scratches and, like, to have her...
And survive it.
Heal, yeah, to survive it, yeah. So, dun dun dun.
So, I think we can rank this at number 12, underneath Sam is Dean the dog. How do we?
Yeah, I don't think it's a particularly crazy cliffhanger.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Because it's not, less of a cliffhanger and more of a,
I really like the cliffhangers.
So it's our new number.
That are like.
Our new number 12.
Shocking. Oh my God. I cannot believe Gran is dead. Oh
yeah,
my
the
God.
Kind of thing where you're like, I have to press play on the
I
next
can't
episode.
Believe the main character of the show is going to get her ass kicked to Kingdom Come.
Yeah. Superlatives?
Yeah.
Or did we didn't have any character intros, did we?
No.
Okay.
Just kind of like I said, the reintro of
Daphne. I think for most of this, I feel like for most of this season, just Marianne is going to always be my most chaotic.
Yeah it's hard to think of someone who's more chaotic than Marianne.
It's hard to talk about.
It's kind of her brand. Like, it's her whole thing.
Like, I would say Jane Boathouse, but we have kind of already associated her behavior with Marianne. So, like, it still is just Marianne.
But yeah, I do agree with you, Tasia. Actually, her telling Andy, like, what pig, is, like, probably, like, it's great. No notes.
She's a good faker. I love it. For who would you say is most horny?
Looks, we have in the notes Jessica and Jane Boathouse, and I agree with both completely.
Jane Boathouse, at the end of this episode, is, like, climbing on people.
Yes.
Yeah, and again, like, it's because she's under the influence of Marianne, but, like, I also kind of feel like maybe this was just inside her the whole time.
Agree.
And, like, without
well,
the
I think
that
is.
I think it was.
I think that is an effect of Marianne, where her powers are kind of amplifying whatever hedonism you've got inside of you, you know, like.
Yeah.
Those impulses that wouldn't normally come out.
Right.
Yep.
Yeah. I would like to give...
So maybe you're not doing things you would do, but things that you thought about doing. Yeah.
I would like to give a horny shout out to just a party that includes it being cool to take your top off and a hot tub. Like, it is just a horny combination.
So it's a vibe.
Yes. Awesome.
Spoiler time?
Besides...
Book spoiler time?
Yes, I think so.
If you haven't watched ahead, then already. Go ahead and we'll see you next time.
Yeah.
But.
Elise has some notes here. I'll let you start.
Oh, well, I said this already, but like Eric and company know more about who injured Sookie in the book than they did in the show. Like, they know it's a Maenad and that it was looking for a vampire. Also, Chow is very tattooed, like heavily tattooed in the book, which I think is great.
I think it's great, too. I think that the language around, like, talking about Chow in the book is, like, very dicey and questionable. But I do like the characterization of just a completely head-to-toe tattooed vampire.
Yeah. I don't think Charlene knows how to talk about people that are not white very well in general.
I haven't read the books. I'm shocked at you. I haven't read the books, but I do have to tell you that we did not talk about, like, the worst death of the episode, which was R.I.P. Pam's pumps.
I know. You know what I think is funny about, though, is, like, you could have changed shoes. Like, you don't keep a pair of, like, Crocs or something at the office.
I refuse to believe that Pam doesn't have an entire fucking closet of shoes at Fangtastic.
Yes. She wore those to the function out of spite after that.
Maybe they're all pumps. Like, maybe they're just all nice pumps.
They're all just nice.
Okay. I choose to believe that Eric buys her new ones.
I'm sure.
Like, regardless of
what happens. I love his little, they were good pumps. Or, like, they were great pumps. It's so good.
Yeah, that was so... I'm like, okay, you're not a straight man, and I love you. It was great.
It's also kind of
flirty. I don't know. I love it.
It made me think of... I think it was in episode one of this season where he tells Bill that, like, being a good maker can be, like, very rewarding. Because we know that he made Pam, you know, into a vampire. And so, like, their relationship, I just think, is really cool in the sense that, like, it's kind of flirty, kind of sexual sometimes, but it's also kind of just, like, they have each other's backs, but he, like, is in charge, but then he's also going to, like, reassure her by being, like, they were nice pumps. You know, like, it's just such a
they
nice,
deeply
like,
love each other.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
I think it is out of this whole show that where there are, I've probably said this in other episodes, in this show where there are so many relationships that I love so much, I think that Pam and Eric are my favorite. Not even romantic, you know, obviously not really romantic, but, like, platonic soulmates.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I agree with that completely. They're the only people that I don't remember. I mean, I might be wrong, but I don't even remember them ever, like, not being friends. Like, they don't have, like, a fight that breaks them up.
They are a solid team, I think, the entire way through the show.
Yeah. One other thing that isn't different in the book that I wanted to mention is that while the punishment for Bill killing Long Shadow is handled differently in the book. Sookie is very, very happy to not know how anyone was punished for that. Like, she doesn't want to know if Bill had to do anything because of that incident, which is obviously very different from, like, you know, finding out here that Bill had to meet Jessica and, like, having... I mean, I think she feels guilty about it and, like, having all these feelings and... It's just very, it's an interesting choice. And I think it makes the show more interesting because I feel like that would be, I don't know, that just seems too ignorant for Sookie as a character to be like, yeah, whatever. Like, it doesn't fit with her for me.
She's too nosy. Yeah. She's got to know what's going on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it doesn't really matter.
Does anyone else have?
But, like, Eric, like, takes the punishment for the incident with Long Shadow. So, like, whatever the punishment is, it was Eric's to deal with anyway. And then Bill runs for, like, Vampire Student Council, basically, so that he can, like, try to get them some protection from Eric. It's really silly.
Vampire Student Council also sounds like a show I would
watch. I know. Definitely.
is the school only for vampires, or is it like a human and vampire school? And is there a human, if it's both, is there a human student council and then like a council on top of that that has both humans and vampires?
I need to know all these questions. Like a vampire Probably. Student council for vampire students. That's what's in my mind.
Cool. I love it. Does anyone else have anything to say before we wrap up and plug our other things?
I'm good.
Well, Tessa, thank you for joining us. Why don't you go first?
Especially on this, especially since I gave Lazzy no choice. So I am currently, I have one podcast, Nanny Ogg's Book Club, where my friend Nigel and I are reading through all 41 of Terry Pratchett's Discworld novels. I believe when this episode comes out, the last episode we released will still be the one for Hat Full of Sky, which is the 32nd episode that we've released. So we're making some progress. You can find that on Blue Sky at Nanny Ox Book Club. You can find it on Twitter at Nanny's Book Club. You can also find my writing on Movie John. I have recently been, I'm continuing my column, Artificial Bodies, Artificial Lives on Androids and Cyborgs in Film. The one I just released was on Robbie the Robot from Forbidden Planet, which I wrote way too much about because who knew he was such an important character. But I also am writing a review of the black and white Johnny Mnemonic that should be coming out later this month as well. So you can find that on moviejohn.com. That's moviejawn.com.
Thank you. Melissa?
I'm on the internet at Blue Sky and Letterboxd at Mellow Yellow.
Tasia?
You can find me on Instagram at Ragey Cakes, and you can find my YA book podcast at Actia Age on Instagram as well. We are going to actually have an episode in this here month of November. So we don't release too many episodes these days, but we are going to have an episode on, I believe, Fourth Wing and Iron Flame, the massively popular books by Rebecca Yarros. Not very YA.
Awesome. Yeah, I've been seeing that everywhere. I think one of the books maybe came out today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I went to a Barnes & Noble midnight release party because they're bringing those back. So awesome.
I love that.
Yeah.
That is
Yeah, my cousin posted about it.
Yeah. I think the series got picked up by, I think, maybe Amazon for a series as well. Oh, so, interesting. You know, maybe hop on that train so you can be smug book readers with us.
Sounds like fun. And you can find me on Blue Sky, Letterboxd, and Storygraph at Chicken Tendi. That's T-E-N-D-I. My other podcast, Pod Rates, a Deep Space Nine Rewatch podcast, is on Twitter, Blue Sky, and Instagram at Pod Rates, PodRaiths. And wherever you listen to podcasts. Thanks very much to DJ Empirical for our theme. You can find the pod on Twitter, Instagram, and Blue Sky at FangBangersPod. And email us your chaotic, horny thoughts on True Blood, please, to FangBangersPod@gmail.com. I'm Elise, and my blood type is extremely lazy but loyal.
And I'm Tessa, and my blood type is Jesus asked me on a date today.
And I'm Melissa, and my blood type is a joint with a filter.
I'm Tasia, and my blood type is real nice to dogs.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.